A Quackcast, The Revenant Edition, number 240. This one's called AI and the Scam Literature, from the Science-Based Medicine article of the same title from September 17th, 2024, where you will find the references. A couple weeks ago, Open Evidence dropped into my feeds. I am, as is no surprise to anyone who listens to this podcast, a fan of evidence. And I like open. Open skies, open vistas, open source. I use Linux as my daily driver and write most of my screeds in NeoVim. So open and evidence are two great tastes that should be great together, to coin a phrase. What is open evidence? Well, the front page calls themselves, quote, the leading AI-powered medical information platform. Leading, mind you. Well, I may not be enamored of AI, but I can use adjectives with the best of them. As the leading SBM blogger, well, the leading elderly blogger who is also a retired infectious disease doctor, I feel particularly qualified to see what they have to offer. Even if I may not be, quote, trusted by medical professionals at 7,000 plus care centers across the U.S. But I do have a more than passing knowledge of scams and infectious diseases. I may not have hoovered the internet, but I have literally read thousands of articles over the years on those topics. I would be confident to go in against an AI Sicilian when medical knowledge is on the line. While they have open in their name, they do not explicitly mention if they have trained their AI ethically, i.e. respecting copyright, or if they scrape the internet for content, the current euphemism for stealing other people's work. There are references behind paywalls, so I wonder how those papers were accessed. They have partnered with Elsevier, if that's pronounced right, so it looks like they are training their AI on the up and up. I do agree with them that, quote, quote, information overload is an extreme challenge in medicine. The quantity of medical information is staggering. There are easily 20,000 articles a year on PubMed categorized as infection. I would have to read 55 a day to read them all. My ID attending as a medical student called reading the medical literature as drinking from a fire hose. I am not certain why medical articles are referred to as the literature, however. They ain't no Great Gatsby. Actually, I've never read The Great Gatsby. The number of quality medical studies that are relevant to a given practice, well, that's not so much. For my infectious disease podcast, I looked at maybe 1,000 titles a month, downloaded maybe 100 articles, read 50 in detail, and maybe talked about 25. So I bet I easily read 50,000 articles since medical school. And to my mind, the medical literature was more about finding the needle of relevance in a haystack of worthless. I am not so sure the solution is, quote, to tame the medical information fire hose, we built Open Evidence, an artificial intelligence system to aggregate, synthesize, and visualize clinically relevant evidence in understandable, accessible formats that can then be used to make more evidence-based decisions and improve patient outcomes. I am old school. I think you actually have to read the original literature and over a lifetime slowly and painfully understand medicine. The Reader's Digest version ain't gonna do it if you want to master a topic. You don't get good at killing robots with a sword by playing near automata. You have to go out and kill them for reals. I thought it would be interesting to see what Open Evidence had to say about some common scams. Scams are tricky, since there are many pitfalls in applying the standards of evidence-based medicine to fiction-based medicine. There are so many poorly designed studies, biases, and spin that goes unrecognized unless you learn to look for them. It is why there is science-based medicine. Open Evidence does have their own version of the quack Miranda. Quote, Open Evidence is an experimental technology demonstrator. Open Evidence does not provide medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Which is fair enough. Only a fool takes medical advice from the internet, so a buyer beware. I started with homeopathy, since of all the scams, homeopathy is the simplest to understand. I mean, really, it's just water. And from outside of thirst, there is no physiologic process homeopathy can affect. Unless you are either delusional, aka a practitioner, or clueless about reality. I ask, what is homeopathy effective for? And received the following. Quote, homeopathy is not widely accepted as effective treatment for any specific medical condition within the mainstream medical community. You mean the reality-based community? The evidence supporting its efficacy is limited and often conflicting, because homeopathy is worthless. Some studies suggest potential benefits in certain conditions, but those findings are not robust. There's a Weasley understatement. Enough to warrant widespread clinical use. For example, a review of clinical research indicated that homeopathy might have some effects in conditions such as allergic rhinitis, influenza-like syndromes, otitis, allergic complaints, fibromyalgia, sinusitis, rhinoconjunctivitis, and arthritis, sometimes pronounced arthritis. However, the evidence is often derived from studies with methodological limitations, i.e. they stink on ice, and the results are inconsistent. It begs the question as to why water would be effective for any of the above. Open evidence evidently isn't trained to understand Bayes' theorem and prior probability. In the field of psychiatry, a systematic review found some efficacy for homeopathy in functional somatic syndromes like fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome, but not for anxiety or stress. Another meta-analysis reported mixed results for psychiatric disorders, with some studies showing efficacy in major depressive disorder and premenstrual syndrome, but overall the data were insufficient to support clinical use. Surprise, surprise. A systematic review of allergic rhinitis found that homeopathy might offer some symptom relief, but the overall quality of evidence was low and the results were not conclusive. In summary, while some studies suggest that homeopathy may have effects in certain conditions, it doesn't. The overall quality of evidence is low, understatement, and there is no strong consensus supporting its efficacy for any specific medical conditions. True, but shows a complete lack of understanding about the basics of homeopathy. More rigorous, high-quality research is needed to draw definitive conclusions. No, it doesn't. The book is closed about the efficacy of water in the treatment of diseases. If the I in AI actually stood for intelligence, it would know that. Three references to support the above assessment, all meta-analysis. That is the synthesis of a vast literature, maybe 6,800 hits on PubMeds, on the effects of water on a variety of diseases. Really? That's the best AI could do? If this was a med student talk, students on medical rotations are often assigned to review a topic and report it rounds the next day. I would assume that the medical student had their radiology residency all lined up and didn't give a crap and made the barest of efforts to understand the topic. I give open evidence a D-. So I ask, how does homeopathy work? Because, you know, it doesn't. Quote, homeopathy is a therapeutic system based on the principle of like cures like, also known as the Simila principle. This principle posits that substances that produce symptoms in healthy individuals can be used to treat similar symptoms in sick individuals. We call that fiction. Homeopathic remedies are prepared through serial dilution and succussion, vigorous shaking, which proponents claim imprints information into the water used for dilution. This is a theory of treatment that is divorced from reality. It is a delusion. The pharmacokinetics of homeopathic remedies, particularly those in high dilutions, remain controversial. Controversial? I think the AI is modeled on Vincini. These hypotheses suggest that these remedies may work through mechanisms such as bioelectromagnetic information, water chain signaling, and regulation of systemic root network bifurcation points. I mean, really, open evidence presented this like it was explanations that actually have meaning. They don't. Another model proposes that homeopathic potentiation involves the formation of stable nanodomains in water, which can retain and transfer electromagnetic information from the original substance. These mechanisms are bullshit and tells you absolutely nothing about homeopathy would work if it could work. Really an instance of garbage in, garbage out. I asked the exact same question a week later and received a slightly different, although equally nonsensical, answer. Quote, several hypotheses have been exposed to explain how homeopathy might work, including the formation of nanodomains in water, electromagnetic resonance, and Drum roll, please. Quantum entanglement. Quantum entanglement. Seriously. I went to the reference and it says, quote, "The quantum theory of non-local phenomena inspires the idea of an entanglement process among patient, practitioner, and the remedy." Now, it's been many years since my degree in physics. The third year of a physics BS, that's Bachelor of Science, is quantum mechanics, and I actually still enjoy reading on the topic. I can recommend Quantum Drama, which I am currently reading. It is also argued that no one really understands quantum mechanics. I don't. But I know what it isn't, and it isn't the above description. That sentence and that reference are gibberish. Neither homeopaths nor open evidence can recognize it as such. Next up, chiropractic. I tried to ask the same question each time, so I ask, what is chiropractic effective for? And the answer is, quote, "Chiropractic care is primarily effective for managing musculoskeletal conditions, particularly low back and neck pain." Significant, Vincini? Evidence supports its use in these contexts, showing that chiropractic care can provide significant pain relief and improve function. For example, a study published in JAMA Network Open demonstrated that adding chiropractic care to usual medical care resulted in moderate short-term improvements in low back pain, intensity, and disability among active duty military personnel. They say significant, whatever that means, but give us a single instance of short, moderate improvements, like you get from, I don't know, placebo? So somehow the entire literature can be summarized from one study. And that study? Patients receive more than just chiropractic. Quote, "Usual medical care included self-care, medications, physical therapy, and pain clinic referral. Chiropractic care included spinal manipulative therapy in the low back and adjacent regions, and additional therapeutic procedures such as rehabilitative exercise, cryotherapy, superficial heat, and other manual therapies." Color me unimpressed. If this had been a human reporting the results, I would ask Dr. Vincini if they actually read the paper. To continue, additionally, chiropractic care has been shown potential benefits for other conditions. A systematic review indicated that chiropractic care might benefit patients with asthma, cervicogenic vertigo, and infantile colic. There's also some promising evidence for its use in otitis media in children and pneumonia in elderly patients. There's no reason on earth why chiropractic would do diddly for any of the above. But as an infectious disease doc, I looked at the pneumonia article. And what do they call it? An instance. It was a systematic review. Again. So I looked at the two references for pneumonia. Both were osteopathic manipulations. Maybe not the same as chiropractic. When I think of chiropractic, I think of cracking the spine to adjust mythical subluxations. In the study, the pneumonia patients received, quote, "The manipulation techniques of OMT protocol were administered in the following sequence: thoracolumbar soft tissue, rib raising, doming of the diaphragm, myofascial release, cervical spine soft tissue, suboccipital decompression, thoracic inlet myofascial release, thoracic lymphatic pump, and pedal lymphatic pump." I would suggest that ain't chiropractic. And the other pneumonia study, it was a pilot study for the randomized study. The devil is always in the details, but I would not consider that study as evidence of chiropractic efficacy for pneumonia. And given the references, it is obvious that this AI is not really looking at the literature with anything that vaguely resembles an eye for details or understanding. To continue, for pregnancy-related low back pain and pelvic girdle pain, chiropractic care has been found to have inconclusive but favorable evidence. Well, which is it? Is it favorable or inconclusive? Suggesting it may be beneficial for some patients, the weasel words are strong in this one. Similarly, postpartum low back pain and girdle pain may respond to chiropractic interventions, although the evidence is not definitive. In summary, chiropractic care is most effective for musculoskeletal pain, particularly low back and neck pain, with some evidence supporting its use for specific non-musculoskeletal conditions. Further research is needed to solidify its role in these additional contexts. No, it doesn't. There's no biologic plausibility or quality studies suggesting efficacy, so no further research is needed. Chiropractic, like homeopathy, is a closed book. It's nonsense. Again, four paragraphs and four references for a complex literature. There are almost 10,000 hits on PubMed for chiropractic. And the literature is either systematic reviews or misleading primary literature. If you do not read the primary literature, you will never understand a topic. So far, open evidence is not cutting the mustard. This ain't Reader's Digest, which looks encyclopedic in comparison. The chiropractic subluxation complex is a fantasy. No such thing. What does open evidence say? Quote, a chiropractic subluxation complex, often referred to as a vertebral subluxation complex, VSC, is a concept in chiropractic medicine that describes a purported misalignment or dysfunction of the vertebrae that is believed to affect nerve function and overall health. Now, what it is supposed to do is to block the flow of energy, what they refer to as innate intelligence. To continue, the term encompasses a range of theories and models that have evolved over time. The VSC is thought to involve biomechanical derangements of the spine that can lead to neurological disturbances. No, it doesn't. This concept has been central to chiropractic practice, serving as a primary indication for spinal manipulation therapy. Theories around VSC suggest that these spinal misalignments can cause a variety of health issues from disrupting normal nerve function. Although this remains controversial, no, it's bullshit, and debated topic within both the chiropractic and broader medical communities. Historically, the first subluxation complex model was proposed by Fay, and subsequent models were developed by theorists such as Lanz and Dishman. These models were integrated into consensus statements by the International Chiropractic Association and the American Chiropractic Association. Despite the historical and theoretical significance in chiropractic practice, there is a call for more empirical research to validate these concepts and their clinical implications. In summary, a chiropractic subluxation complex is a theoretical construct in chiropractic medicine that describes vertebral misalignments believed to affect nerve function and health. Although its clinical validity remains a subject of ongoing research and debate. Not bad for Dr. Vancini, if a bit too accepting. Again, there is no need for further research, as that is a fictional process. Can chiropractic manipulation cause a stroke? Quote, yes. Chiropractic manipulation can cause a stroke, specifically through the mechanism of cervical artery dissection. This association has been documented in multiple studies and case reports. Well, at least I got that right. And lastly, our favorite theatrical placebo, acupuncture. What is acupuncture effective for? Hint, nothing. But open evidence note, acupuncture has been shown to be effective for several conditions, particularly in the realm of pain management and certain cancer-related symptoms. They then go on for four paragraphs to show that pain management and cancer-related symptoms, as well as mental health and functional dyspepsia, have had effects that may be positive from acupuncture. And end with, the American College of Physicians recommends acupuncture as a non-invasive treatment option for acute, subacute, and chronic low back pain, citing moderate improvement in pain relief and function. Really? I mean, the Science-Based Medicine website has so many articles that refute all the above. All the alleged effects of acupuncture can be nicely accounted for by poor study design, bias, and spin. But five paragraphs and eight references for a complex literature with 46,000 hits on PubMed? Can that really do the topic justice? You learn nothing about a topic from this kind of summary. And the AI is equally unable to read the acupuncture mechanism literature with a discerning eye. After the usual four paragraphs, they conclude, quote, acupuncture works by activating peripheral efferent fibers, modulating central pain pathways, and influencing neuroimmune interactions to achieve analgesic and anti-inflammatory effects. This is not quite an AI hallucination where they are incorrect or misleading results that AI models generate. Actually, when you think about it, the literature on scams is like an AI hallucination. Anyway, that works for me. When open evidence may be artificial, it sure isn't intelligence. The AI is equally accepting of a variety of explanations for acupuncture meridians. Not being discerning, the AI has to accept all sorts of contradictory nonsense at face value. Wait, maybe AI here is modeled on a naturopath. That would explain a lot. You can ask similar questions of Reiki or other scams and get similar responses. But understanding scams is a learned skill. One cannot simply apply the standards of reality-based medicine to therapies that are based on fiction. Most doctors can't. And it is reflected in the literature, which is reflected back in this version of AI. When it comes to scam, AI is a gullible rube who just fell off the turnip truck. Because I asked it, what is science-based medicine? And it replied, quote, science-based medicine, often referred to as evidence-based medicine, no, it's not the same thing, is a systematic approach to clinical practice that emphasizes the use of best available research evidence combined with clinical expertise and patient values to make decisions about care of individual patients. No, EBM and SBM are not the same. And isn't part of the point of EBM to get away from clinical expertise, aka the three most dangerous words in medicine, in my experience? And while important in providing care, patient values have no bearing at all on the evidence or science outside of fictional entanglement. Steve, David, we got to get the message out. Big AI fail here. And then I ask, well, does the MMR cause autism? It was nicely definitive and in bold, no less. No, the measles and mumps and rubella vaccine does not cause autism. And they had real references here, rather than the always problematic systemic review or meta-analysis. I was struck at how a complex literature was reduced to a handful of paragraphs, and for scams, very badly sourced references. Reminded me of my kids' middle school English class, where they focused on the five-paragraph essay. It seems open evidence did not progress beyond the eighth grade for scams. Understanding the medical literature is hard and time-consuming, and there are no shortcuts. For scams, open evidence demonstrated incompetence. But there is real medicine. How would AI do for that? So I picked a topic that is both common and often screwed up. How do you treat Staph aureus bacteremia? And they got it right. I had no quibbles with their result. It was a correct, if very superficial, summary. Again, they only had five reviews as references. Hardly a summary of a literature, 8,000 PubMed hits, but at least it's a start. The rationale for why you do what you do for Staph bacteremia is not mentioned, and if you do not know the why of it, you really do not know what you are doing. And I, for one, am glad that AI recommended, quote, appropriate, end quote, antibiotic therapy. That is so much better than the alternative. I have to wonder who would want to ask this question and find the reply useful. If it were a student or a resident, the result was way too simple to understand the topic. If an ID specialist, it is a summary courtesy of Captain Obvious. And if you are, say, a hospitalist, and if you are using this as your guide, I would wonder if you should have patient care responsibilities. I asked it some other questions of other common infectious diseases, urinary tract infections, cellulitis, pneumonia, and I always got a five-paragraph reply with three or four references from mostly guidelines and systematic reviews. I can say that the results were correct, but so lacking in context and understanding, I had trouble envisioning a target audience. I suppose a healthcare provider who wants minimal understanding of a topic? A summary of a summary? I'll pass. It may be trusted by medical professionals at 7,000 care centers across the U.S., but I would be skeptical of trusting a medical professional who relied upon AI for their understanding of disease and treatment. As I say, there are no shortcuts to mastering the medical literature. The scam blind spot for evidence-based medicine is alive and well at Open Evidence. They need to add SBM programming to their AI model. I wonder if that blind spot is amenable to remediation. I hope they have a concept of a plan to incorporate science-based medicine into their AI. I mean, I doubt it's doable. You often can't get real intelligence to do it. And that ends the Quackcast Revenant Edition number 240. References are available at Science-Based Medicine from the September 17th, 2024 article, AI and the Scam Literature. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time. Bye.